enough. Please ask me. Let's have questions. Let's talk together. And whatever was unclear in my talk, we could begin there. Or if you have something else in mind, let's take off wherever you want to. Who? Yes. No, I have not, because I feel the utmost freedom in my tradition. I feel no confinement in it at all. I feel that the man from whom I received my permission to teach was somebody who looked at things in such a broad dimension that the fact that I was a woman and not a Japanese meant nothing at all in the way of a confining point of view. Quite the contrary, he looked at this as seeing that this was somebody who had committed her life to this, and that's all there was to it. And so I feel great freedom in it. I also feel that the strength of the discipline of Zen is something that gives us great freedom. That the analogy that I often make is of a fountain, of a beautiful fountain, comes through a hole in cement or in rock that is very tiny, compressed, very strong, disciplined water, and then it comes out into full bloom. So I have no feeling that my Zen tradition is anything but freedom-making. Does that answer you? Well, I think what we do with it in our practice in Cambridge is that the ritual is, I say to people, only to be done by them if they feel they are doing it with their heart, with their whole body, with their whole person. If you are bowing, to offer yourself completely in bowing. If you are walking the wonderful kinhin that we do, which is so quiet, so slow, such a beautiful kind of slow dance. This, I mustn't go away from here, I'm sorry. This is formal and strong and, if you like, a ritual, but it is the wonderful ritual of just walking, which we do every day. The ritual of bowing is an offering, which we are doing every day, giving ourselves to whatever it is we are doing. And these rituals have the same kind of effect of making a framework, which then we have great freedom in. If somebody composes music and they don't have some kind of form in which to put it, it's a mess. If there is a wonderful form, then it comes to us as satisfying, because we feel, there's a beginning, there's a middle, there's a conclusion, there's some kind of build-up in this. And this is a ritual, is it not? This is something that helps us put form to this feeling. And these rituals are devotional in aspect, are they not? So again, it is from heart, from spirit, this kind of practice, ritual. Not something that's put on you, not at all, but something that is given to you to work with from your heart. Yes?
I was just sitting here realizing that the intimidation you spoke of, which you linked with these particular women in some cases, their intimidation by men, I want to mention, and I want you to tell us more if you can, what you can, what you have found from your own Zen experience with reference to intimidation by women. Also, I would like you to talk, if you can, on the connection between compassion and doubt and conflict.
Oh, that's a big order. My word. All right. Intimidation by women. Well, this is possible, certainly. This is very possible. I have had no experience of that in my Zen practice. The women with whom I have practiced have all been, I would say, very supportive people. Perhaps what you are referring to, though, may be a kind of, look how I'm doing it. You mean it that way, yes. Yes, why aren't you doing it the way I'm doing it, you know? I am a great Zen student. You see what I'm doing? Is that what you mean?
I'll give you another angle on it that came to my mind. The three participants, one spoke with her eyes closed without notes. One gave us a bibliography which reflected a lot of reflection. Some of your talk was, I would say the bulk of your talk was, quotation. Now, this is a very interesting, for me personally, difference, and also says something to me with reference to the way women reflect something of their own inner workings of compassion. And it raised in my mind doubts as to how come someone would quote, why wouldn't they quote, etc. When I speak, I always quote, and I've been called on it. And I was just curious about the connection as it came up between being intimidated by women who don't seem to have any doubts about what they're doing, which was my experience this morning, and also doubt and compassion.
Well, let me speak from what I just spoke to you earlier. The quotations that I chose for you were because they were things that I felt I could speak from personally. The koan that I gave you, I feel, fits all of us. So I chose that. The quotation of the nun, I felt, fits us all, that we, our very presence speaks for us, and it was a powerful expression of that. The poem that I gave you is a summation of our session together. Those were my three quotes. The rest of it was my own feeling of what those things brought up in all of us and what the summation of our experience together was as expressed in this poem. I think that doubting things is very healthy for all of us. The experiences that many women have gone through in Zen practice and other practices, which have been enormously difficult and sometimes life-shattering, in fact, have caused them to doubt and to reassess their practice, to doubt whether they should follow absolutely the dictum of some teacher, whether they should not look into this, have compassion for the person who has, after all, who is just a human being and will make mistakes as we all do, but to realize that this doubting of that situation can help us grow and move on and deepen our own independent feeling in our practice. Does that answer you?
Not yet.
Not yet. All right. Ask me some more. Say it more.
What's your relationship as you just comes whatever comes up at the moment, doubt and compassion? In other words, doubt, compassion. When I say compassion, we didn't define it. You didn't define it.
Well, I'll give you a very good definition of compassion. You come into the bathroom, and you find it's dirty, and you clean it up, and you leave it clean for the next person. You come into a situation that's not so good, and you try to offer what you can, clean it up to whatever degree you can, and leave it for the next person. Not being sentimental, not being oozy, gushy, doing things inconspicuously to help. This is compassion, in my definition at this moment. Maybe tomorrow I'll give you another one, but at this moment, that's my definition, all right? So you may come into this messy scene and have many doubts about what's produced this, okay? Like, what's produced the mess in some Zendos? What's produced the mess in some Zen communities? But you don't walk away you from Zen or from practice because of that messy situation, you stay there and try to clean it up as to the best of your ability and leave something for somebody else. That's not, and not saying I'm doing it, but just do. Okay? Yes, Doris?
I'd like to ask you about form just a little bit. I'm finding some difficulty with projecting to a whole form. If I watch the arising in my mind or on a surface and the duration and the cessation, I can't do anything. The form seems to, for me now, arise out of a much more automatic process. But that's not what I'm reading in a lot of the teachings and what I've heard in a lot of the teachings.
What are you hearing in the teachings?
That you take a form, which is appropriate, hopefully, and then you work from that or through that to your own form. I don't think that's what's happening to me, and I have some question about that. It's a much more automatic process so that the form comes out of a series of arising.
Well, you are an artist, a painter, and I'm a musician, so let's use those forms. Let's use those analogies, and all the rest of you, I think, have some knowledge and some experience of this. So, if you are... What happens when you have a form that you were just describing to me earlier today? You said you were painting within a certain form. What happens?
No, I'm painting within a certain space.
All right.
The space doesn't have a form.
All right. Anyway, all right.
It has its own form, and then there's a joining of you with a particular, in this case,
there you got it. There it is. All you right, just
so,
said it. Okay?
So I'm,
got it?
I'm making too limited a definition.
Said in your talk, an exciting and a hard time for Zen in America the last few years. And I wonder if there's a tradition of doubting the teacher that you could talk about. And particularly something to women students doubting some men teachers and how to work with that? What's the way to go
without doubt? Well, I think I've already said that, but I'll try to say it again more clearly. That really it is our own practice that is our best teacher. And one of my teachers said this to me any number of times because a lot of my training, my practice, had to be done alone. I did not have the privilege of every day going to a zendo and so on. So I made my own zendo in my house. I sat by myself a great, great deal. And I used often to feel very sorry for myself that there I was all alone and all those wonderful people had that teacher there and they had that zendo there and so on. And I wondered a lot about what I was doing. Is it all right? What am I? How am I? So I went to him one day and I said, I am really very, I have grave doubts about what I'm doing. Great doubt about what am I doing? I sit down on this cushion every day. What am I doing? And then he said to me, and I have said it to you, your very best teacher is your own practice. The fact that I was sitting there doubting, what am I doing, made me go more deeply into it. Made me feel, well, what is this? What is this? And this was very, very much stronger than sitting in a comfortable place where everybody was handing me the spoon, sort of saying, here, eat this. This is the next thing for you to do. All right, have this. This is it. No, I didn't have that. So this was good. And I encourage people to sit alone a lot. In fact, Dr. Hisamatz, the man that was the founder of one of the founders, and whom I quoted too, by the way, for obvious reasons, said he wanted people to sit together only once a week. The rest of the time they should sit alone. and they should find out how they deal with themselves it like that.
But is there a tradition of saying to the teacher, what are you doing?
Oh, I have done that. Oh, yes. I went to the teacher in the very beginning of my practice. I went to a session where we were all being screamed at to get it. You know, hurry up and get enlightened. Get it! Well, have you got this yet? And finally I went to the teacher and I said, I just don't feel this fits at all. I thought I came here to lose my grabbiness, instead of which you were saying to me, have you got it? And he said, all right, go your own way. And I did. I said no to him. I said, no, I can't do this way. I don't think this is the way. There's not just one way. Find out your own true way. That's what Rinzai said, too. Find your own way. Look into your own mind. Don't hang on somebody else. You can only have your own experience of this. Nobody can taste your food for you. Nobody can fall in love for you. Nobody can do these things. You must do it yourself. Okay? Yes?
Could you speak a little bit about how emotions fit into the practice of how to stay alive? What is the benefit of using them, not using them, balancing them, etc.?
Well, this emotions are the dynamic force in us that move us on. If you get angry about something, you have to move one way or another. You can't just sit there because you'll explode. So that's pretty helpful. If you have a really powerful emotion, you have to do something with it. And I constantly urge people in their sitting to confront those things head on. Don't repress them. Don't push it down and say, I'll deal with this later. If we are in the midst of session or they can come and see me, I say, come right up, explode at me. And boy, you don't know how much of that I get. Tell it all. Tell it as it is. Yes. And then the force of that energy is used in some good way. Very powerful, our emotion. To love somebody is a wonderful, wonderful emotion. And this is one we have to be very careful of as teachers. This is one of the things that has been misused, that the wonderful, loving, open-heartedness of us women has sometimes got us into troubles. We have to balance that with our wisdom and say, wait a minute, what do I hear here? There was a woman who came to me not so long ago and said, I went to this conference and there was this wonderful teacher there. And I was so inspired by what he had to say. And I went to see him and I said, I just can't tell you how much it means to me to have heard you. And this was so wonderful. And he became very, very happy and pretty soon was asking her to go for walks in the woods. She came to me heartbroken. And I said, well, wait a minute, didn't you ask for this in a way? Be wise yourself. The teacher should be wise and say, no, no, I cannot start playing around with this lady. I'm the teacher. I have to keep this wonderful, loving energy emotion in its place. This is to really answer your question, too. You understand? This is a dynamic thing. What are we going to do with it? Don't misuse it. Use all these things. They're wonderful energy makers. Wonderful moving on, right? Anyone else? Yes?
I'd like to ask a question about the watcher or the listener. Sometimes I feel bored and I feel it's another form of holding on to the ego when you get totally involved with the watcher that sits on.
Indeed, you again answered your own question. That's right, exactly. If you are so expanded to the whole universe kind of feeling, which is really our practice, then how can you be bored? If you contain yourself and pull yourself back on that and are the watcher and not the one who is completely involved, there's where the trouble is. But if you are completely involved, every pore of you, who can be bored? Yes? No? Something.
Not so simple.
Doris, you have a very interesting and wonderful mind that you never want things to be simple. You want to make them all convoluted. What's difficult about that?
Because I can't deal, I understand intellectually to some degree the state of compassion, which is a state that when you are at that place, you function compassionately. I know it's a space.
And but not everybody is there all the time.
Yes, but if you don't deal with...
Nobody is, in fact.
If you don't deal with these arisings and with these sensations and feelings and observations... And
I'm just asking that you should. We've just talked
about it. You should not.
No, you should. You should absolutely look at them and then let them go. Absolutely look at them.
I'm going to ask a very stupid question because I don't know the answer to it at all. How in the hell do you let go? You may think you're letting go, and I say to myself, I'm letting go.
As soon as you are saying, I'm letting go, you are not.
All right.
You can't even say it, I'm letting go, then you're not. Yeah. You're right. Hanging on to I'm letting go.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was interested, you were talking about the all-woman session. Do you think that's something that you do again?
Oh yes, we're going to do it again in January.
Where?
In California.
What about on the East Coast?
Well, we might sometime.
Yeah.
It's not something that I want to do over and over and over again. But what happened was that this particular session was so wonderful for all of us. It was an incredibly wonderful experience. I was so moved by these women, I can't tell you. I just was absolutely thrilled with every single one of them.
How many were there?
19. And every one of them really was there. When you say how many were there, they were there, really there. And when they started telling people about their experience, people said, I wish I could have that experience. So that's how we're going to have it again in January. And when I went to other places, I went to Berkeley Zendo and San Francisco Zendo and Tassajara, and I told the people there about it, the men were as happy as they could be to hear that we had had that experience together. And I said, it is in no way to exclude you. We love you. But it was a great way to feel our own strength, their own strength, their own kind of, well, just what I've said to you. So maybe we will do it at some point on this coast. But it was incredible, the response of these women. Amazing.
Why should I clean up the mess in the toilet in Zendo?
Why?
Why? I got there and it's a big mess, and I think a bunch of people made the mess. Now, why would I want to clean up their mess?
Well, because we're all in this together. We are all one in the spirit, so to speak. And it's maybe that person who left the mess, I don't know, maybe they were sick, maybe they were absent-minded, maybe they had a terrible illness in their family, maybe there was some awful reason, or maybe it was just sheer absent-mindedness, in which case, if it was in my Zendo and I saw that somebody was behaving badly, I'd just take them off into the room and say, get to it, honey, that's your mess. Not up to somebody else to clean up for you. This is simply a symbolic way of speaking that we can only do what's around us to help. And it's all, everything is our mess. Everything. We're all in this together. Okay? Yes?
Do you think that Zen in America is emotion? Emotion is something that is American Zen Buddhism, and you think women contribute to strengthen emotions?
No, I don't think so. I think that this is a human thing, and I'll give you a very vivid example of that. My first teacher was Yasutani Roshi, a wonderful old Japanese man. And when he was giving a talk, when he was giving a teisho, or you were having a doksan personal interview with him, if the situation was one of sadness, tears came in his eyes. If he was telling a story about somebody who was very happy, he laughed right out loud. Whatever it was his own human emotion expressed to that situation. Not cold at all. I think that coldness in our practice comes if people are insecure and are too clinging to the form. If they are hanging on so tightly to the form and forget that first of all we are living human beings with wonderful feelings, wonderful expanse of lovingness in us or hatingness in us or whatever it is, to face that, accept that, look at that. And then know that there is something else there as well. We are not just our emotions. We are this wonderful Buddha nature. We are Buddha from the beginning, men and women. No woman excluded from being Buddha, Jacqueline, wherever you are. No, every person, every woman, Buddha. All these so-called teachings are things that Buddha had nothing to do with. He didn't say that. Some monk later on, who was getting a bit nasty, wrote down things. Women can't do this, or women can't do that, or women are no good, or women can't be Buddhas. That had nothing to do. That has nothing to do with Buddhism. Is anybody going to deny that? Are you going to say I'm wrong? Hmm? Yes? Anybody? Yes.
No, I just wanted to ask, what is happening to Zen in America? I don't know.
What is happening? There are Zendos popping up all over the place. There are people sitting everywhere, like yourself. Molly just found out about this in May. Sitting every day, full of enthusiasm. Ladies sitting, seshin together. This is happening in America. Women getting up and saying, I can do this. This is Zen in America. What is Zen spirit? It's this dynamic, lively force, this life force. This is the heart of Buddhism, or the heart of whatever you want to call it. Yeah?
Would you, following along those lines, would you speak to us about the use of awareness of our own aggression and awareness of our potential for an evil aggression, mm-hmm. and the use of that in turn in compassion, in making compassion of reality.
Right. Let's think of a very specific example. Can you? Can you think of something particular? Will you tell us?
I can think of the destructiveness of my repression of my own anger.
Well, that's just what we were talking about. When you can allow yourself, when you can be compassionate enough with yourself, there's where it begins. Be compassionate with yourself. Don't say, I am an awful person because I feel so angry at that one. I am a dreadful human being. I shouldn't feel like that. This is being unrealistic, and this is not being compassionate. Every single human being has ups and downs, goods and bads. There's nobody who is in a perpetual compassionate state. No one. We know that it is in us, and it is for that reason that in our zendos and meditation halls we have beautiful kanon bodhisattvas to remind us that this is us. We're not bowing to something outside of us. This Buddha, you're bowing to your Buddha, your Buddha nature, and accepting at the same time all that other stuff. Yes. Sometimes I eat too much. Yes, sometimes I drink too much. Yes, sometimes I smoke too much. Yes, sometimes I'm angry. But I am a living human being whose basic nature is Buddha nature, and I can stand up and say, okay, here I am. It's all right. Yes.
I it's really helpful for me to hear what you said about compassion being an action, right? Because I think as a woman I was raised, compassion was a feeling of forgiveness and a way of sort of glossing over sometimes things that were wrong. And you talk about sort of going in and cleaning up the back, about the way women are going in and trying to clean up the biggest messes that we have right now, you know, particularly disarmament and all of that. And yet, I'm not sure what I want to ask you, but something about the balance of toughness that seems to be required to deal with these massive situations, combined with compassion for self, because women are burning out so much trying to, you know, go out in the world and clean up the messes. And sort of like, we've always been the mess cleaner-uppers, and yet we're called to do it, you know, we have to do it, and how can we take care of ourselves?
Well, I'm just saying to you that we must do it from a different place. That's what it comes to, is that we are not doing it out of, it's like with the form that we were talking about. We're not doing this as something imposed on us, but something that we feel in our hearts must be done. And it is an expression of that. Compassion is not glossing things over. Compassion is acting with passion, compassion, with passion, with activity, with all of this wonderful energy that we have to give to whatever it is. Yes, action. Absolutely. But then we must realize too, and this is something that is often difficult for us as women, that we do need periods to sit back and refuel and refresh. And that's where we need our wisdom to know when to do this. And to be strong enough, to be tough enough, if you like, to say, no, I can't do that right now. I can't do that. You do. Somebody else do. All of us will do this together. But to say, really, I can't do this all by myself, that's being strong. Yes? Yes.
You said that our practice is our own teacher, or the best teacher. But I wonder about, one of the questions I'm kind of exploring for myself is how to practice without a current teacher and also without a group. And I wonder what your perspective is about that.
Well, I just told you about my own experience.
But you had a teacher that you went to once, and you...
Well, once in a while, yes. Yes, and I went once in a while to sit with other people, that's true. And so that was a kind of checking out. As it turned out, what happened is that the teacher that I had at that point was in a place where I was a sort of senior student, and being an older person, I was always put up near the altar. So when it came to times when you could see the teacher in my Zen Rinzai tradition, everybody runs to Dokusan. And I never got there because I was up at the top. And by the time I got to the Dokusan room, it was the end. And I never got to see the teacher for months on end. Months. But I got so much just from sitting there. Just from being there. Just from being here today. It's a wonderful teaching. And what kind of life you have is a wonderful teaching. I know a little bit about you. You have constant teaching. You have a baby. This is the greatest teacher. This is the most wonderful teacher. You have to be there all the time. You can't goof off. You have to be present. Isn't that a wonderful teaching?
Yes.
Right, you got it. You don't need anybody else. Yes. Okay. Well, it's your particular feeling. It's all right. I mean, in a true Zen temple, by the way, in a true Zen, in a Zendo, there should be no image at all, none. This was the beginning. No Buddha, nothing, just a plain room. For this reason, just what you're saying, no involvement with any kind of thought about who is that, am I related to it, is it this, is it that, no, nothing. In our Zendo in Cambridge, we have a Kanon Bodhisattva who looks like a man and a woman, both. That doesn't mean anything in particular except to remind us of just what we've been saying. It's not any particular male-female thing. So in a way, you have to deal with your own feeling about that. When you look at it, don't be intimidated. The Buddha is here, in your heart, not up there. That's it. A glittery statue, it's a piece of material, but the real Buddha, here, there you are. No need to worry about it. If you don't want to look at it, don't look at it. Look at the trees, beautiful, wonderful. Look at the grass, full of Buddha. Okay? Yes?
You spoke before about the messes being all of ours. Could you talk a little bit about, let's say, in a relationship with someone, being close to someone else, and they have a lot of problems, and feeling that I should have compassion and help them, but recently feeling more so I need to draw back and just let them take care of it. Kind of the law.
That's the real line. Compassion, is letting somebody take care of themselves.
There's always something.
Oh, no, no. You be there.
Yeah.
You be there.
Right.
Absolutely. But let that person do something, do it themselves, and you are there supporting them. That's the real compassion. Not, here, I'll give you this. You need this? Help them find their own way. That's compassion. And then you don't have any resentment afterwards either. If you are doing something for somebody because you think they need your help, then suppose they don't like what you've done for them too. They get mad at you and they say, look at that miserable person. They're so ungrateful. I did all of that for them. You see what came out of it? Don't. If that person asks you, would you please hold my hand while I'm dying, which somebody said to me the other day. Yes, I'll hold your hand while you're dying. But I'm not going to come and sit beside you and say, I'm going to hold your hand while you're dying. No. You understand the difference?
Yeah, you talk about being present. I'm also getting to the point where sometimes I feel that I need to leave.
By being present, I mean that when you are there, you're there. It's the quality of whatever time you spend with somebody that matters. You don't spend 24 hours sitting there thinking, gee, I wish I could get out of here. Children especially feel that. There's your teaching, too. Children feel that. If you're really with them, not just sort of handing out the blocks, here, honey. Oh, I wish I could get out of here and have a cup of tea. But really playing with them. Maybe saying, oh, look at this. Feel this block. Isn't that nice? Hey, can we make a game out of this? Really involved. Then they respond, right? Oh, yeah. And that applies to all of us. That's our mindfulness practice. Yes.
I'm still interested in talking about the relationship between teacher and student, and it's wonderful to hear that your own practice is your best teacher. And at the same time, it seems to me that a relationship with a teacher has been extremely helpful for me. What is that?
Well, again, my dear Meredith, who are your teachers? It's not just one person. Look around you. Who is teaching you? You wrote me a beautiful letter the other day telling me about various things in your life. They're all teaching you. You don't just need a Zen teacher or an insight meditation teacher or a lama or something. You have wonderful human beings who are teaching, who are showing you. Yes?
Yes.
But.
Yes, I am.
And. I understand what you're saying, and I'm sure that many of us in this room do. The thing is that once having had an experience that was so unhappy-making and so disillusioning, we must put that down. Say, look, I had this. And it doesn't mean that you won't have another teacher, perhaps a formal teacher. But in your next encounter with a formal teacher, you may look at this from a much more mature point of view and remember that this person is just another human being with all kinds of frailties, with all kinds of weaknesses, with all kinds of stuff that's difficult for them too. And if you see that there is anything in this teacher that is really bugging you, get away, get out of it. Nobody has to stay in a situation simply because that is the teacher. There is no the teacher. My teacher, that first one, that Yasutaniyoshi, said to me, you are my student. We had a formal ceremony together to become a teacher and student. I didn't see him very often. He was away in Japan. Or when he came to us, he was very busy with lots of other people, and he didn't speak any English, which was all right, because we really didn't need that. But there was a very strong bond between us, whether he was here or I was there or where we were, because of the practice. Because of the practice. I remember all kinds of wonderful things of the practice with him. So it again comes back to that, don't you think?
Sure.
Sure. Yes.
We started with the chant, and then you mentioned Daisen Suzuki. I was very amazed to discover that after a lifetime of writing about Zen, that he ended embracing Pure Land.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, this symbolized sort of a resting in the heart, so to speak. And I would like you to speak more of this because, you know, this image making and using technique like this is something that we really cut off in the practice of just sitting. And yet, I am beginning to see a certain place for this resting in the heart, almost a salutary or celebratory experience. And
well, actually, it's not really so different at all. The two things are so interrelated. Think about this. You have to inhale to exhale. You have to take in all this wonderful feeling of awe, wonder, devotion, love, heartfelt experience, and then you give it out. So our Zen way may be thought of as self-power. We are sitting, generating this ourselves, but we're not doing that all by ourselves. Everybody knows that. This is the whole universe that's doing this with us. It's not just each little individual. So this is, I think, what Dr. Suzuki emphasized in the last years of his life, was that this Shin Buddhist practice was so devotional in aspect and made people expand to one another, not tightly drawn up like this. And that, I feel, is the real Zen practice too. Again, we don't need to put a name on this. Don't cubbyhole it. Don't pigeonhole it. Don't say, this is it or this is it. We don't know what it is. The only thing we know is what we experience. So Dr. Suzuki's experience was, in the ending part of his life, that this marvelous Namu Amida Butsu, is like Namu Daibosa, right? If you chant this, it's the same kind of feeling, the same kind of wonderful connection with everything. It's not separate. Nothing is separate. Nothing is separate. Does that answer you?
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.